20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is the day before the Green Bay Packers will take on the Los Angeles Chargers. Paul Breddle is with me this fine day. Paul, how are you?
I am fantastic, and the Packers are 7-1.
They are, and I promised myself that I was not going to say San Diego one time on this show, so hold me to that, okay?
All right, I'll do my best. It's still tricky for me as well.
All right, so Saturday, day prior, Packers changed up their schedule a little bit. I think, didn't they get in on Friday? They went in on Friday, right?
Yep, they did.
Yeah, so, man, all these changes. Head coach Matt LaFleur changing it up, getting the team out there, acclimated to a different time zone. And then on top of that, you've got daylight savings time ending on Saturday night. So for those of you out there in the beautiful state of Wisconsin and anywhere else except for where I'm at, which is Arizona, don't forget to set your clocks back on Saturday night. Don't show up too early for the game on Sunday. Although I guess if you're going to be one or the other, you'd rather be early than late, right?
Well, exactly. I'm always a few hours early anyway, so I think I'll be fine there.
Oh, so you're on Lombardi time. If you're on time, you're late. If you're early, you're on time.
Exactly.
All right. So as we typically do on Saturday, Paul and I are going to talk about the injury update heading into this game between the Packers and Chargers. And this is interesting territory for us, Paul, because as fans of this team for a long time, we know that one of the bugaboos that they've had for many years is injury issues. And that's something that I think has it became a narrative that got a little out of hand. The Packers are not the worst injured team in the league. There's always teams that have it worse. We just think it's bad because we see it and we're sensitive to it, and we want all those guys to be healthy. But here we are heading into Week 9. And the Packers virtually, everyone practiced at one point this week, and they don't have anybody ruled out yet. I mean, they're at a pretty healthy point. Now, there's still two games to get through before they get to the bye week, but this is a great spot to be.
Oh, 100%. And like you said, we're always kind of sensitive to the injury bug, but it's a combination of some bad luck and, things just happen in the game of football. It's a physical game, but I think some of the credit as well has to be given towards Matt LaFleur and his practice schedule. I can't remember which site I was reading it on, but I think it was last week or so where Bakhtiari said, they're about halfway through the season now, or they are halfway through. And he said this is the best that he's felt at this point in the season in a long time. And I think that's just a credit to Matt LaFleur and just being more conscious of practice reps and being aware of how the guys are feeling week to week. And I attended a lot of the training camp practices going back to the summertime. And one thing that I was really impressed with was his efficiency with the practices. And I remember one of the big narratives was the first Packers practice was under 2 hours, and the Bears practiced for an hour longer. So, of course, they're crowned Super Bowl champs at that point. But I think it's just little things like that, doing more walkthroughs like LaFleur has, where it's more the mental reps in what the guys are going to be doing rather than the physical. And when you take that out through a whole season, I think that adds up to a lot of time, and guys are feeling better and they're healthy.
Oh, let's be honest with ourselves here, Paul. The Bears fans crowned that team back in April after free agency ended. So
absolutely.
We know how that goes. And let's just take a look at the records real quick, and we're done. Okay, so in looking at honestly, on the Packers side of things, it's a short conversation because as of Friday, when the last injury report came out, the only two players that were listed as questionable were receiver Davante Adams, still recovering from his turf toe, and tight end Robert Tonyan with the hip. Everybody else is going to be good to go. So the Packers are actually going to have to decide who to keep active and inactive this week. It's always a good problem to have, but again, the health is incredible. And when you look at Adams, I saw the viral video today about Adams leapfrogging his coach in practice, and some of that stuff is cool. I know he wants to get out there and play, but we talked about being a fan for many years in the injury situation in Green Bay, but on the flip side, I also can't help but trust this team because they take such a good approach to getting guys back out there and not rushing them. And you don't want to take any team lightly. And the Chargers, although they haven't achieved, they've underachieved this season. You know, their point differential is zero. They've scored as many points as they've given up. They've lost a lot of close games, haven't been able to finish. You don't want to not put yourself in the best position to win, and having Devontae Adams obviously is that. But you've got a situation where it's an AFC matchup, you're favored to win. The crowd is going to be predominantly Packers fans, which is odd, you know, to think about. And you've got an NFC matchup next week against the Carolina Panthers before you go into the bye week. So if it's a matter of he could go, but do we want to hold him for another week, Paul, what's your take on the approach with Devontae Adams this week against the Chargers?
I think if he's feeling good, and most importantly, he's cleared by the doctors, them saying he's good to go, I think that they should play him. Now, I don't think he needs to play a whole game. Maybe he only takes, you know, 40, 50% of the snaps, you know, plays in the first quarter too, and maybe by halfway through the third quarter or even at halftime, if the Packers got a, you know, 2-3 score lead, they feel comfortable with what they're doing, sit him down. Now, on the flip side, if it's not 100%, I, like you said, with how they're getting Jones and Williams in the running game, the other receivers have stepped up, Graham and Lewis have stepped up as well at the tight end position in the passing game, I don't necessarily think that they need him to win. So if he's not 100% healthy, don't send him out there. Don't risk further injury. But if he's cleared and good to go, I think it's good to get some snaps. It's been a month. Get him back out on the field for some reps and back into football shape and live action.
Yeah, that's important. The speed of the game and everything like that, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are or how many years in the league you've got, that does impact your ability to get back into that rhythm. And like you said, I think there's something to be said there. But it's hard to think that a guy like Adams suits up if he's not going to start, if he's not going to play a full game. But the other thing, too, that I've mentioned before, I think, at times, and this is more of an administrative thing, but these guys don't make the same money when they're out injured versus when they're playing. Now, obviously, someone like Adams, who's got a contract extension, has got, you know, paid his bonus and he's got his guaranteed money, but it does make a big difference. You know, so not that he's necessarily playing for money, but there's just another reason why he might be kind of pushing them to get himself back out on that field. But I also think the Packers realize, with as successful as they've been this season, that they've got a lot of special things in front of them right now if things go well. And I know for a fact that this team has bought in and they're thinking long term and they're thinking team first and do the right thing. So I'm sure the Packers will make the right choice there. But Adams can't go. You know, one of the injuries, if we want to kind of fluidly talk about the injury report for this week, one of the injuries on the Chargers side of things is safety Roderick Teamer. And he's listed as doubtful. And this is who is coming in for Derwin James, who is the standout rookie safety for the Chargers. So Teamer's listed as doubtful. If he can't go, then it looks like it would be backup Jalen Watkins in there and handling some of these Packers wide receivers. So if you've got a starter in the secondary out, it would seem to bode well when you've got role players having to step up like Jake Kumerow and Alan Lazard, Geronimo getting his snaps, MVS still coming back from the ankle there. So, you know, that might be another thing where you say to yourself, okay, we've got a favorable matchup here. We can be more careful with Devontae.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, above all else, you got to worry about, like you said, the big picture. You know, the Packers have a lot bigger goals this season than the Chargers in week 9 when they're sitting at 7-1. But if he's good to go, it's good to get those reps in. And the loss of Teamer, I think that's going to be significant for the Chargers. They're only giving up 217 passing yards per game, which is, I believe, top 8 or so in the NFL out of everybody. So having him out of there might create a hole at some point, somewhere, that obviously we expect Rodgers to take advantage of.
Yeah, and the Packers are going to see a couple of old familiar faces in this game. The first one is former Packers cornerback Casey Hayward, who has played extremely well since going to the Chargers when the Packers did not bring him back. And he has made a couple Pro Bowls and has played well there. Every defense is different, and I know that, you know, he wasn't as thrilled about not getting a contract in Green Bay. I know Aaron Rodgers spoke about that this week when he was asked, and he was surprised at the time that they didn't extend or ask Casey Hayward to come back. I think they felt like they had some depth. It was kind of an odd situation because Hayward and Micah Hyde both leave, and they've both done well elsewhere. So Casey Hayward has got some familiarity with these receivers. You don't know how much that's going to necessarily play into that, but he's playing well. And then at linebacker, you've got Thomas Davis, formerly of the Carolina Panthers. And if there's another reason to maybe hold Davante Adams out, if anybody remembers the game in late 2017, if I'm not mistaken, where Aaron Rodgers comes back from the collarbone injury finally that he suffered earlier in the year in Minnesota. The Packers are kind of middling. They're kind of still in the playoff race, but it's looking kind of dicey. They had to win that game. And Thomas Davis, on an interception play, ends up taking a shot at Davante Adams, and Tay Adams goes out with a concussion. So, two years later, you know, Davis is definitely at the end of his career. He's as listed as he's a starter for the Chargers, but I can't imagine that he's going to be anything great. And if you look at how poorly the Chargers play the run, you know, they give up a lot of rush yards. That's going to be a thing this week. I think the Packers might have some opportunities there. Just, you know, take advantage of the old man there. And I had to kind of take a little bit of a shot at him and bring that whole situation back up, because any kind of chance you can get to get some revenge via victory, I'm all for it, even though bygones supposedly are bygones. But thoughts on Casey Hayward, facing Casey Hayward and his familiarity with Aaron Rodgers and some of those receivers?
I think it'll play a little bit of a factor, but in this game, you know, we were talking about before we started, the last time the Packers and Chargers got together, it was a shootout between Rodgers and Rivers. But as you mentioned, the Chargers rush defense, they're giving up 123 yards per game this season, which is in the bottom third of the NFL. And Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams with Adams out, they've been the workhorses, whether that's running the ball or in the passing game. I'm expecting a lot of those two and establishing the run early on. And then like the Packers have done, they'll take their shots off play action. So I think Hayward, I don't know how much, you know, he's a great player, and that's, but I don't, in the sense of his familiarity, I don't know how much of a factor that'll be, especially with the Packers focusing on running the football.
Yeah, and I think they absolutely are going to have to do that again. You want to kind of keep the Chargers offense off the field with that, you know, the pass catching back, and then you've got Melvin Gordon, and the unfamiliarity. The AFC-NFC matches are always kind of squirrely because of the familiarity factor. It's just you don't really know a lot of, about each other. And so the Packers doing the same thing that they kind of did in Kansas City, just kind of wind the clock down, I think would be a great approach for them to have there. Austin Eckler is the running back. He's got a lot of catches for the Chargers, so it's almost a game of two offenses that run their passing game, seem to run their passing game through their running backs. So this is a week where, you know, we're talking about the injury report. Maybe a couple guys that are not on it that are very important for the Packers are Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, and I'll throw Danny Vitale in there too, because Vitale's made some big catches, and I don't expect the running back's involvement in the passing game to be a whole lot different this week.
No, I'm expecting the same thing, and I think even when Adams gets back and is playing, you know, most of the snaps like he has been, I think having Jones out there and Williams out there in the passing game, and once you add Adams to that element, I don't know what you do as an opposing defender when you got to worry about those two out of the backfield and then Davante Adams out wide. But I also wanted to touch on the Chargers. I heard this stat today. They have gone four straight games without rushing for 40 total yards. So wow. That is going to play, you know, that plays into most defensive coordinators' hands, but we know Mike Pettine likes to make defense or offenses one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. So if they can do that, and the Chargers, their offensive line just really beat up. I mean, Mike Pouncey's on IR. And so if Pettine knows that they're one-dimensional, he's going to be able to, you know, send the dogs after Phillip Rivers, who at this stage in his career isn't very mobile. You know, I kind of think back to the Denver game earlier this season. Denver's a more effective running team, but with Joe Flacco not being able to move around the pocket, I think the Packers are going to be able to get after Rivers, force pressure, get sacks. They've been opportunistic this season with turnovers, so I would expect a turnover or two as well.
Yeah, I mean, that would be fantastic. I mean, you mentioned the offensive line, and they have struggled a lot, and so that's gonna be something that Petten's gonna have to kind of try to take advantage of. Overloads. You've got Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith, Rashawn Gary, all those guys. You want to see them have a big game. Phillip Rivers is not a very mobile quarterback, but he's savvy and he can move around in the pocket and kind of get the ball out. So again, quick pass. And the corners are going to have to play tight coverage. They're not, I'm assuming, going to try that same zone scheme that they did against Kansas City, just because
was frustrating.
Well, the speed of the Chiefs receivers made mm-hmm. sense there. The Chargers don't have that at all. I mean, Keenan Allen's a great receiver, but he ain't running past anybody.
Right.
So if you can play more press coverage, and I trust Kevin King, Jair Alexander, Tremont Williams to get up there and press these receivers. You're going to disrupt the early throw. I think you're give that rush, you know, maybe an extra half second to get there. This, you mentioned turnovers. The other thing is how many sacks might they get in this game? Because in theory, offensive line not doing well. Now teams have adjusted well against the Packers. I mean, the Smith brothers, as we call them. I think I don't recall them having any sacks in Dallas, although maybe they had one. But Tyron Smith was out, the left tackle was out, and Dallas adjusted well. They were missing, the Raiders were missing their right tackle. They adjusted well. I don't think there were any sacks in that game. And that was more about getting the ball out quick. And so I think teams on tape say, hey, the way to negate this pass rush for the Packers is, and the pressure is, get the damn ball out. And I think that's what Rivers is going to try to do. But to your point, if he does that and he throws it a lot, the percentages say there's going to be a couple of those that could land in the Packers' hands.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a good point on your part. The Raiders kind of, they put out the blueprint, and they didn't do anything, you know, special or different from what they normally do. The Raiders are just a quick passing offense. They get the ball out of Derek Carr's hands, but it was very effective. And then last week, the Chiefs were missing their starting left tackle, starting left guard. They have Matt Moran, backup quarterback. They just want to get the ball out of his hands quickly. So I think that, like you said, that's a bit of a blueprint that's been put together against the Packers. And I think the biggest concern, at least my concern in this game, is Austin Eckler, pass catch and running back. Like you said, coming out of the backfield, who's gonna be on him? And I think he just creates a lot of mismatches.
Yeah, he does. But I think Mike Pettin's aware of it. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where if they're going to lose and they're going to get in trouble with giving up points, it's going to be because they didn't get him covered and they didn't get him taken care of. So if San Diego's going to scheme the hell out of this game and come up that way, then that's – or I did it. I said San Diego. There it is. If the Chargers are going to scheme up this game and get their – you know, their offense rolling and come up with a good game plan, you just kind of have to tip the hat, you know, tip the cap. Now, it's not an injury, but a big change for the Chargers is Shane Steichen, the quarterback's coach, is now going to be the interim offensive coordinator. He takes over for Ken Whisenhunt, who was let go earlier this week. Anthony Lynn, head coach for the Chargers, said in his press conference there were just some things that he wanted to see done differently and a different direction gone with this offense, one of which was their lack of a commitment to running the ball. So Paul, obviously, even though they don't run the ball well, now is an opportunity for them to fix that and make some changes. So do we see the Chargers maybe try to force the issue a little bit and get the ground game going? Are we going to see a heavier dose of Melvin Gordon?
I think so. I think the pendulum's going to swing a little bit in the opposite direction. You know, it's human nature, or I guess I'll speak for myself, when you hear the offensive coordinator has been fired a week before, you think, oh, okay, good, you know, that's a good thing for the defense, they're not going to be organized. But a new voice coming in, new, you know, defensive concept a little bit, or offensive concept a little bit, you know, that can change, and they might pull out some stuff that isn't on film or teams haven't seen a lot this year. So it is something that the Packers have to be mindful of. And while initially it seems like, you know, wreaking havoc or, you know, something along those lines within the organization, it could be that new voice that kind of refreshes them and gets them going and that gets them back to the things that what they have done well in the past, which is running the ball with Eckler and Gordon.
Yeah, so Packers defense is going to have their work cut out for them once again. It just seems like week in and week out, they're dealing with something. So, I mean, it's good. You know, I mean, this team is going to be ready for when the level of competition ratchets up late in the season and other teams are fighting for playoff spots and they're playing the Packers. You think about in about a month's time, Green Bay is going to be going into San Francisco and taking on a 49ers team that's conceivably not going to have lost a game by up to that point. You're battle tested. The defense is ready for some of those things. And what I saw from San Francisco, not to get too far ahead, you know, they're going to have their hands full with with them too, because Jimmy Garoppolo's matured. He's throwing the ball to spots, and now he's got a new weapon in Emmanuel Sanders, who is smart enough to just go get the ball and settle down and make those grabs. So, you know, I'm all for it. I think it's a good test. And Keenan Allen, even though he's a little banged up, you know, he's going to be ready to go and looking to, to do some damage. You mentioned the last time the Packers and Chargers met. That was at Lambeau Field in 2015. And rookie Demarius Randle made a huge play at the end of the game to knock a ball away and end a scoring drive and keep the Packers, I think, undefeated at that point. And it always seems to be the shootout type of game where you said Phillip Rivers is probably going to have the ball at the end of the game with a chance to win. Now, I'll tell you this right now. I trust this defense now. If it's Phillip Rivers, there's a couple quarterbacks that I'll be like, oh, okay, I don't know. But, the majority of them, and if it's Phillip Rivers up against our defense at the end of the game, I think that matchup favors the Packers. That just seems like one where it ends with a terrible ball thrown for a pick. Yep. Or a ball gets tipped up, or maybe Darnell Savage, rebounds and makes a big game-saving pick, and it's a big catapult from him, and it's something that launches his career from there.
Yeah, and the defense this season, it's far improved from what it has been, but there's also been a number of times, and, the second quarter against the Chiefs game is a prime example where it just hasn't been pretty, but they get the stops when they need to, whether it's holding a team to 3 points instead of seven, a sack, a turnover. Tyler Lancaster shifted the whole momentum of that game last week with that strip and the recovery. Say what you want, they're not, the 85 Bears by any means, but they get the stops when they have to, and field goals are fine. If teams want to march down the field, get to the 20-yard line, kick a field goal, 3 points aren't going to beat Aaron Rodgers.
No. Absolutely not. And the Packers offense is going to have opportunities in this game, not only because they're playing so well, the run game's working, it's Aaron Rodgers rejuvenated. The offensive line, very stout. You know, one guy who's not on the injury report, but we should probably talk about, because we talked a little bit about it before the show, is Brian Bulaga, right tackle. So he suffered some dislocation of his finger, and he's going to put together some sort of a makeshift splint and play with it this week. I think he wants to be out there if Aaron Rodgers is out there. I think he and Bakhtiari have the same mentality. If 12's out there, we have to be out there. And I trust the medical staff, obviously, that if he's taped up and he's able to be out there, that he's not risking a ton of further injury and he's going to be okay. Because there's a lot of hand working and a lot of, grabbing, and their fingers get twisted up in those pads and in jerseys. And it's I'm surprised that these types of injuries don't happen more often.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I want to mention on just Bulaga in general is he catches a lot of flack for the injuries and the time missed, and he has missed some games over his career. I'm not denying that by any means, but it's not his choice. It's not anyone's choice. Kevin King hasn't chosen to be out. These are injuries. It happens in football. But Brian Bulaga, he's a warrior. Like you said beforehand, he dislocated his finger in two different places. And for an offensive lineman, your hands are, they're doing almost everything along with your feet. And last year, he missed two games with a torn MCL. All he missed was two games in a season that was meaningless. He could have sat out if he wanted to. I've always been a fan of Brian Bulaga and what he does, and this season he's really, really proving it on the field. I hope they bring him back, but I just want fans out there to know that he fights through all that stuff. And, I mean, for good reason. The Packers need him, and he's a heck of a player.
So here's the deal. Okay, and I think we might have talked about this on a previous episode. After this season, the Packers are going to have to assess their needs. And fortunately, this isn't a team that has a billion holes, but they're going to have some needs that they have to fill. Brian Bulaga is a guy who seems like he wants to continue playing. He obviously knows this offense very well, and if he can fight through some of these injuries and play well and be effective, if you bring him back, because I was on team, this is it, Bulaga's not coming back, and maybe he won't, but if you bring him back, you reduce the pressure to have to find your right tackle of the future. Because it's not Billy Turner. I don't think Billy Turner can just slide out to right tackle and be the tackle of the future. That might have been the you know, some thoughts when they paid him his money in the offseason, but I don't think that's what we're going to get out of Billy Turner. So then you don't have to necessarily find your right tackle of the future. If you do, great, but you know, after the Jason Spriggs fiasco, I don't know if that's necessarily always a given. Now the Packers did find a gold mine in Elgton Jenkins at left guard, but I mean, Bulaga's a guy that I think looks a lot better in green and yellow than any other jersey, if you ask me.
100%. To me, tackle is a premier position in this league. They're not going to go out and find a Brian Bulaga caliber player in free agency because they just don't get there. And then as far as the draft goes, they're tough to find as well. And it's a difficult position. You got to be, you know, able to work in space, taking on a bull rush. You got to go against the speed of a, you know, an edge rusher. It's just a difficult position to play. And if you draft a rookie, is he going to be ready to go right away? And I think we did have this conversation before, because what I'm about to say, I know I've said, I'll take 12 or 13 games of Brian Bulaga over just about anyone else.
Yes, you have said that. Yes, absolutely. Trademark it. That is a Paul Breddle original right there. And I agree with you. I mean, and like I said, you know, they buy themselves a little bit of time. They bring him back 2-3 years. You know, he can still play. I mean, it's his 10th year in the league, but
I think he's only 30.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, listen, hey, Father Time shows up suddenly and quickly, and I understand that. It could be 2 years from now. He might play another 7 years. I have no idea, but I would gladly take the chance and try to find out if I'm the Packers, but you know, let them handle that after the season is over with. But going back to the Packers side of things in the offense, we were talking about how the offense could roll and do well. And one an opportunity that they're going to have is there's two guys that are doubtful that are starters on the defensive line. Now, unfortunately, neither of them are defensive ends, Joey Bosa or Melvin Ingram, the third, who are absolutely phenomenal pass rushers. And those guys are going to be a huge, huge focus, and they're going to be an issue all day for the Packers' offensive line and the protection. But defensive tackle Justin Jones and nose tackle Brandon Mebane are both doubtful for this game, which means there's not a good chance that either one of those two guys are going to play. So in their place, you've got Jerry Tillery, who I believe was their top pick from last year, and Damian Square would maybe step in then for Mebane at nose tackle. You may have an opportunity in the middle of that defense to try to run. Now, obviously, the Chargers are going to have a plan for it and try to stuff the middle. You know, maybe you try to get to the outside a little bit. I don't know how well, you know, either Bosa or Ingram sets the edge, but they're both Pro Bowlers, so I'm not really necessarily sure. I want to try to find out. But the middle of the defense there, running the ball, we talked about that. What kind of opportunity might they have there in the middle against the Chargers with these two big guys out?
I think it's a great opportunity. And like you said, you don't necessarily want to test Ingram and Bosa on the outside. But right up the middle, and you know what? Just follow Elgton Jenkins. And on Elgton Jenkins, he doesn't play a premier position. But if someone's going to be Rookie of the Year who's not going to get any vote whatsoever, it 100% should be him. I saw a stat today. He's allowed no sacks, and I don't even think he's allowed a quarterback hit since he's taken over at left guard. So go run up his way. Billy Turner, he had a slow start to the season, but the last 3-4 games he's been very good at right guard. And then, of course, Corey Linsley. So I like the Packers, even if the Chargers, like you said, are going to come up with some sort of way to try to combat that, whether it's a linebacker or someone extra up the middle as well. But I think that's where you got to attack, especially with Bosa and Ingram on the outside.
Yeah, and I think Jenkins, the nice thing about Jenkins is once you've got the basics down and the fundamentals down, then you can start to kind of do some of the nuances that veteran interior linemen do, where you hit your first block, then you shed off and you pick up the guy coming through on a blitz. You know, I think he's got the smarts and the intelligence to do that, and then you've only got seasoned veteran Corey Linsley right next to him who also knows how to do those things. So, you know, that all equates to Aaron Rodgers having more time to throw or a chance to move around and create plays. And with Matt LaFleur getting guys open in space and creating simple and easier throws, good luck opposing defenses is all I have to say. You know, it's going to be really tough on them, I think. But yeah, Jenkins has been fantastic, and it is unfortunate that the linemen don't get the love, because you know, that always goes to, seems like it always goes to either a corner or a running back or a receiver or maybe even a quarterback. But he's been fantastic. But hey, I'm cool with him being under the radar and having teams just all of a sudden, like, you know, send a guy up against him, and it's like, you know, I think I'd have a better chance running through one of my walls at home, you know? Right,
exactly. What an under the radar draft pick he was. You know, in the second round there was all those receivers on the board, and everyone wanted a receiver, and most still do. But the Packers go with Elgton Jenkins, the center from Mississippi State. And what a draft pick.
No, it was. And we all wanted a receiver. I was on an airplane getting ready to leave, and the pick came in just as my flight was taking off. And I was like, why? I was like, an offensive lineman. And after the Jason Spriggs thing, I was like, man, they better get this right, because Spriggs was a disaster.
Especially most of the time what they've done is they'll take a tackle in like the third, fourth, fifth round, and then convert him to an interior lineman if he's not athletic enough or good enough to be a tackle in the NFL.
Right. Well, that was Ted. God love him. God love Ted Thompson. So a little bit of news this week. Not a whole lot to say, because I'm sure we both are ecstatic and agree very much with it. But Al Harris and Charles Woodson going to be inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame, which is fantastic news. I don't think there's any argument there. Those two guys definitely deserve to be in it. I don't know what my favorite Charles Woodson memory is. I'm not exactly sure. God, he had a big pick six. Well, he had several big pick six. Right. I, you know, for me, there was a big interception he had in 2009 to seal a victory against the Bears at Soldier Field. I remember that one in particular. That was big. I think he also had a really important pick against the Lions in 2010. They might not have won the game if he hadn't gotten that. And that was in Lambeau Field when they had that long winning streak going on. Al Harris, that one's obvious and easy. That's him streaking down the sidelines against the Seahawks in the playoffs. Paul, any thoughts? Obviously, Charles Woodson, Al Harris, very deserving. But any memories that stick out to you?
The Harris one is obviously going to be the same. After Matt Hasselbeck said they won the ball because they're going to go score. My favorite Charles Woodson moment actually came off the field after they beat the Bears, when he goes, "We just need to be in position. Jay will throw us the ball."
I love that quote. Same old Jay.
Yep.
Same old Jay. Well, congratulations to those two guys. We'll finish up with the interesting situation where the Packers are almost getting a ninth home game here. So it's going to be in the warmth of the LA sun, and it's supposed to be about 70% Packers fans in the stadium here, which is small. You know, your typical NFL venue holds, what, 75, 80,000? Yeah. I think this stadium tops out at, what, 35?
Yeah, 30, 35.
Smaller, but it's supposed to be very, very heavy Packers fans. When I went to, and I can say at this time because they were in San Diego at the time, when I went to San Diego in 2011, it was a very heavy Packers crowd even then, and the Chargers had to go silent count at the end of that game. It was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen, and it was awesome because the Packers ended up winning the game. But I the crowd could become a factor in this game. I mean, when the Packers are on defense, I'm interested to see how loud it's gonna sound on the TV copy.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that it's going to be a big factor in this game. I think during that 2011 game, didn't Philip Rivers have to go to a silent count at home?
Yeah, he did. He did. He threw two pick six in the first quarter, and he had a third one to end the game. Charlie Pepper had two interceptions in that game, so it was just a level of insanity that is crazy on many different avenues. But I think we pretty much covered the injury updates. The only thing left to do is play the game and get another win for the Packers. Hopefully, they can come out of this thing with their eighth victory of the season. That would ensure that they will not have a losing season already in week 9, which would be phenomenal, I would have to say. It has been a pleasure, and then next week, so we'll be back in 2 weeks. You and I are going to go, it'll be during the bye week, so we'll probably have some midseason updates to talk about and stuff like that. Might be kind of fun, hand out some midseason awards. We can give Elgton Jenkins Rookie of the Year if we're making the calls.
Rookie of the Year.
There you go. We can give him that call. But it's been a good go-round. Packers-Chargers Sunday in Los Angeles. The only thing left to do, Paul, is go, Pack, go.
Go, Pack, go.